at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
All right, Brian O'Driscoll is back in studio. This feels a little bit weird. Welcome back.
Yeah, are we still 2 meters apart?
It doesn't matter. I can see you. I can almost touch you. It feels great to be back because as much as we thought it was all fine and everything, it wasn't really.
No, we were pretending.
And it doesn't feel, it feels like not a forced conversation, but this feels conversational rather than the effort of you log into your computer. This hopefully should be just a chat. This is where I get myself into most trouble.
Exactly. We lull you into a false sense of security and then go, oh, well, tell us the truth. Or there's a raised eyebrow and you're like, oh, shit, I better give some.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, you know what? The problem is you guys are good poker players. So when I say something dangerous or outlandish, there's no reaction from you. So I go, oh, this is good. This is being well received. I'll just keep plowing in.
Oh, that's a lot of clicks. in fairness, though, to the players, because like it was a fake year for them, a fake year of training, a fake year of team meetings, a fake year of representing the jersey and all that kind of stuff. And they did really well with it.
Like, yeah, they did. Yeah. Now, listen, I think you have to bear in mind that they were still able to do their jobs when lots of people weren't. So let's balance things up a little bit. It was brutal for everyone when it did shut down for that. It's such a blur as well.
No, it feels like it was a year.
You can't remember that first lockdown when literally the world stopped. But when it did pick back up again, I think they did feel very fortuitous that they were still able to go and do what they did, albeit in a sanitized version of things. But it does. We've spoken about it at length over the course of the last year. You know, supporters and fans are everything to sport. That the energy that they bring to stadia is a huge component of why we play the game and why we enjoy the game, and why, as a neutral viewer at home, you can see the sway of the referee on the basis of the crowd swinging one way or another. You could hear it in Thomond Park.
Yeah.
You could hear it in the RDS at the weekend. It's great, and I've been kind of continually going to games and covering them, but it feels so different and so new again.
I think we'll always regret that Lions tour didn't have a feverish South African home crowd baiting the referee in that second game, because it would have been like one of the all-time most tense moments in the history of sport after what Razzie's video had done.
Yeah.
You can only imagine what the South African crowd would have been like with like a fairly sizable contingent of Lions fans too. So
I think the other thing on that as well, you can't underestimate I'm not saying that sides change their style of play on the back of crowds, but when the subconscious player, when they hear something positive for a counterattack or a big collision or something that breaks away from the mold of what they've been doing, they log that. That stimulates, you know, whatever drug it might be in your body, and you go, gosh, that felt good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. Maybe I should do that again. And so it just gives you a chance when maybe they're playing to a bit of a constrained game plan, that when you do break away from it and it's well received, something is ignited in your being.
Well, is that what you were trying to do in the second test in 2009? There was an element of getting the crowd. Because we talked about that when we did our classic game club, and you were like, I needed to do something that was going to change the momentum of the game, and that's what I did.
Yeah, I think there's, yeah, when the game slips away from you as well, you're trying to shift that momentum.
But if there'd been no audience there, for example, the tackle would have had much less of an impact.
It would have, absolutely, because you can hear,
like,
you can hear, ooh,
yeah.
And then when the replays are played and Danny Rousseau, you know, falls over,
yeah,
and there's another replay or there's another ooh from that.
Yeah.
All of that feeds into the subconscious. You know, and the conscious. Some of you are watching the big screen,
referee,
and some are,
yeah,
are understanding what's going on and the legality otherwise around it. Oh, and what, you know, when you're watching replays, you realise what others are willing to do and the levels they're willing to go to change the shift in momentum. So
One of the other things I thought about, the absence of the audience and the crowd and the people giving out, was that players who might not have taken a risk were suddenly willing to take a risk, knowing that there wasn't going to be a huge heap of the crowd going, "What are you doing that for?" Which, now, in football, it was particularly noticeable that some of the weaker teams were trying stuff against the stronger teams, and we had weird results in the Premier League. I'm not sure it transferred as much to rugby. It didn't seem like we had this incredible outpouring of attacking rugby, did we?
No, we didn't. But to your point about those players that maybe go into their shell a little bit because supporters are there and getting on their backs, you have to remember too, when you're out in the pitch, you're not hearing the micro detail of what Johnny from Dundrum is saying. "Oh, would you, Carney, for God's sake, don't, you know,
it's always Carney.
Pass the ball," or yeah, or whoever else.
Only down in Munster and Musgrave Park.
You don't hear that. You don't hear that detail. You just hear, "Oh." But you know it yourself. You've already, yeah, your body's already given you off, "Oh."
Yeah.
Because you're your own worst critic. And so, because you're not privy, which is a good thing, to what's being said in the stand, that micro chat, if you positioned yourself up there after an error like you do make in games, you would be a shadow of your former self. Because okay, I'm sure that, I don't put myself in that position very often as a supporter to hear it, because it would just infuriate me. But I know it goes on. And so I'd want to alienate myself, or I'd want to step away from that and not know what's actually transpiring.
Yeah, and you will be a supporter again. That's the opportunity is there for all of us.
No, absolutely. I've been to one Ireland game, and the All Black game in Soldier Field, just because I was going away on a lads' weekend, and we just decided to work that into the schedule. I guess expectations weren't very high of what the game was going to do for the weekend, but it did wonders.
Yeah.
But I've never wanted or had an ambition to go to a game just as a supporter. Because I quite like watching at home. I like being able to say what I want to say, and then a lot of the time, you know, when I go to games, I'm working at them, which I enjoy too, and being able to analyse and scrutinise exactly what's happening, Ireland or their opposition. But I'm going to the All Black game with my 6-year-old for the first time. I'd planned on going last year, and then it didn't materialise with November International. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And obviously the big game you want to go to, with the Haka and yeah, the Mystique around the All Blacks, that's the one.
And will you be a quiet supporter?
Yeah, no, I'll watch the game vicariously through him. It's not. I won't be able to.
When you're at
here.
Home, are you quiet and there's no one around?
No.
What are you shouting at the referee, and why are you doing that?
I'm not really. Occasionally, like I'm trying to, like I'm in commentary, trying to call it in real time. Right. Say that something's a penalty when I can see a good body position going in and someone locking onto the ball. I can, before a referee's going to give a penalty, I'll call it, and either the outcome will be a penalty or I'll be like, "Come on, referee, you got to give him a bit of love there."
When you were playing, were you talking to your teammates, like was there ever any kind of narkiness when you were talking, or was it always kind of, "I have to be positive here even when somebody's really"?
I think you have to know the individual and who responds well to which.
So some people you were narky to because they could
They could take it, because you know that their response and their character justified being able to give it to them, and that they were capable of channeling that in a positive way, whereas there were plenty of guys that it had to be constant reinforcement of positivity around, "You're doing a great job," and focus on the next play, and "You're untouchable when you're on your A game," and just kind of fostering that
in the
positivity.
Middle of a game. You say that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I would do. Yeah, yeah, in the middle of the game, and that's just knowing how somebody ticks, knowing how that individual is wired and programmed, and how you get the most out of them. And that only comes with spending time with them and sitting down and talking about all aspects of life and getting a proper sense as to what type of person they are. Other people will shoot from the hip a little bit more. Like Johnny's a perfect example. Yeah, I would have had, said before on this show, that I would have had like shouting matches with him at training, and but also I would know that
it's got to be grand.
It works for him.
And what are you shouting at him about?
Like if there's a, you know, one like we're both quite stubborn, but if I genuinely felt as though he was in the wrong on something, or he should have done something, or he threw a pass too hard when he needed something, just come on. And it usually wouldn't start with being excessively aggressive, but it's the reaction to the initial outburst then escalates significantly. And Johnny's encyclopedic about his rugby knowledge, so... I've
used the term before in a dangerous way. It's like a bit like having an argument with your wife. You know, something that happened 3 months ago will get regurgitated, and that's the way Johnny worked.
Yeah.
And I remember having a spat with him in a game against Italy, and literally 2 or 3 months later, he brought it up in the next argument. I was like, well, I don't even know what you're talking about. But you know that it's fiery and then parked. And I think definitely all the more so. Listen, it's 7 or 8 years since I've played with him, and I've seen this massive evolution. But even at the weekend, he's still programmed a particular way, got penalised for in at the side. Good decision. I didn't see it initially when I was watching it in real time. Saw the replay. I thought, what was that penalty for? In at the side, and I saw him mouthing to the touch judge, just going, well done, well done. I think you couldn't see the touchy, but I think it was to him. And it wasn't a complimentary well done. So, like, he's still wired that way. And if we want to change that, you lose all the good stuff. And he will overreact sometimes, and he will be regretful of some of the things that he said. But do you know what? I think you have to... He's not for changing now. And even when I was critical of him in Stade de France when he got subbed off, I suppose retrospectively looking at that, yes, from a captaincy point of view, maybe you don't want that from your leader. But
it is
if you
it is.
Take that fire away, you don't have all of the great stuff. Well, and it is a bit of a balance. You can't have one with the other. And I'm not saying that that's okay, but I think if you want... all of the great stuff that we're still getting. Well, we've still got an unbelievable forms at the weekend.
The chippy...
You need that. You need that nastiness, because that's what fuels him. Well, that's what we forget. It's not for us. That's for him.
Yeah.
And that's what works. And that's why those outbursts, he's able to park them immediately, and then he just cleans the slate, whereas sometimes others will live with whatever words he gives them.
Yeah, and I suppose that's up for them in some ways. Like, it's not that important, right? But it is, for if you're on the receiving end of that and you can't take it, then you need to find a way to deal with it, right? That's the opposite side of that, and he probably has to help facilitate that. But he's not making the comeback for being dropped from the Lions and not included in that, unless he is that character, unless he's using that fuel, and unless he is kind of aggressive. And we, you know, we definitely would have been critical after that like, well, how do you feel if you're Ross Byrne looking at the screen? But ultimately, that's the game. It's a really tough environment, and no one is stopping to make sure everybody's okay at every step of the way.
It is. It's a bit dog-eat-dog at times, that you just have to be able to park and move on. And there's so many big games coming that you can't dwell and feel sorry for yourself. And I spoke to him after that moment, and he made a really good point. He said, do you think I was looking up at the big screen and watching myself reacting that way? He said, there's, you know, in stadia, there's always like a 3 second delay on things.
Of course,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, you're reacting a particular way, and the next thing you look up, and then the camera comes on you, and then you start seeing your reaction, and then the camera's gone, and you can't do anything to correct it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so many different aspects to it. And like I said, I am not forgiving that for a second, but I do think
it's part of a complex whole.
It's 15 years, 14 years that we have seen it, and when you're still delivering at the highest level and against all the odds, and we're going to be having these conversations in the next 2 years going, gosh, we're putting all our eggs into hit that basket. But I read Gordon Darcy's article today in the Irish Times, and I totally agree. He's still, by a long way, the best number 10 in Ireland, by a long way, which is so exciting from his perspective, but so concerning from a national team perspective because of one injury or one knock. And, you know, he's probably a bit more durable than people give him credit for, but that's partly because he won't shirk any of the responsibilities, that we are nervous.
Yeah, And so we'll talk about the Munster scenario, but we may as well, now that we're talking about the tens, talk about Healy and the emergence of Healy and how quickly that's happened. I think it's somebody said it's either 9 or 11 games that he's played at this level in his career. And yet, because of the situation we find ourselves in, he's right there when it comes to how we're thinking about who should be the number two to Sexton. And by the end of the Six Nations, who knows? That's a long period of time. A lot of rugby to be played. Do we baby Healy into the Ireland squad? Do we stick him straight into the Ireland squad when he's not even already the established number 10 for Munster? How do we deal with these in a way that's long-term thinking and short-term thinking at the same time?
Because what's long-term? Is Ben Healy likely to be in the 33-man squad for Rugby World Cup? I think you've got to work backwards, and all coaches have to do that. We're 2 years out from Rugby World Cup, so there's a huge amount of development can happen in that time. And I guess as you don't want to be dramatic, because players can always limp in, you know, just in the rounds beforehand, but ultimately you don't want that happening in key positions.
No.
It happened with Conor Murray in 2011, that he got into the squad having just been capped in the warm-up games, but they're unusual circumstances. He's played for his provincial team, he's shown this huge consistency of performance and confidence, but whereas you look at all of the other tens, they've gone very well for a period of time, and then there's a stumbling, and it just, it creates an uncertainty in all of our minds, and no doubt in Andy Farrell and the coaching staff, Mike Catt. They must be thinking, gosh, oh, well, we've got to stay with Johnny. We've got to go there, because it's hard. They're still thinking short-term victories to make sure they're still in the gig in 2 years' time. But ultimately, they've got to start working backwards from World Cup to now to go, right, what does my squad makeup look like if I'm picking from a full deck? And is Ben Healy part of that? Maybe. So I've got to look at trying to introduce him into the fold soon.
It's 50-50 whether or not he's going
to
be there.
Yeah, like it's very hard to tell 2 years out.
You would have said he's got a 10% chance of making it this time last year. But now I actually think that, so let's, there's going to be three outhouses in that squad. Right?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to pick three. I do, yeah.
And so Carberry's more than likely going to be one, and Sexton's going to be one. And then after that, the two Burns are a runner. Sorry, the three Burns, Billy Burns, but I'm not sure if anybody's ever going to forgive the missed kick to touch.
I'm not worried about that. I think that happens, right? That was one incident. I think there's other parts to his game that would concern me there, irrespective of that kick to the corner. Those things happen, right?
Fair enough.
There was other aspects to the that 10-minute sequence that were more concerning than one kick to the corner. So
I guess I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, but I think good players are able to grow their way.
Fair enough. Out of, we haven't seen episodes, that sign yet, though, that he's reached a point where he's able to dominate games, or he's able to influence games enough that he should be in the World Cup squad.
No, I don't think he's shown that. I think, again, consistency of performance, so well and good being a consistent performer at URC level or even European level, but it's just such a huge step up to international. And that's why so many players fall by the wayside, you know, where they've shown great potential at provincial level, but because of some shortcoming in one aspect of their game, it gets exposed, and they're not able to deal with that, you know, rise in tempo, the speed, the less time on the ball. And they go into themselves, and they're not the same player. And that's why when you do get 80, 90, 100 cap players, particularly in pivotal positions, they've earned it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't fluke your way to 100 test matches in a halfback jersey.
No. So Carty doesn't seem to be in the mix anymore.
I don't think he's in the mix. You know, I talked last year that he probably deserved an opportunity, but
it didn't come.
It didn't come, but also there's something missing there too. I think he shows potential. I don't know if he has. See, you have to remember too, even when Johnny Sexton does retire but he's not retired yet. It's a poison chalice to come in and take that over. You know, he had an unenviable task to come in and take over from Ronan O'Gara, and he's excelled. But a player to come in, looking on the basis of all of the quality that is available now, it's a poison chalice, because I don't know if any of them can elevate their performances higher than what he's achieved, which is...
But it's a very high level.
It is a very high level.
We take for granted.
He's a once in a generation player.
Yeah, yeah. And a World Player of the Year and a Grand Slam winner twice and no, once. Three, four Heineken Cups. Like, it's a sensational level of achievement. But that gets us very quickly to Carberry and Healy. And it's like, let's see him now.
Yeah, well, like, the thing is, Johan van Graan's not worried about the World Cup, right? He's worried about...
his job.
About his job. And he's in the final year of his contract, and he's going to pick the personnel that he feels can get the job done. And Ben Healy got a go against Scarlets at the weekend and did very well. It was... a lot was made of the very poor Scarlets, but I thought Munster were really good. They were incredibly organised. They have really evolved their game plan. Some of their younger players coming through. There was lovely. There was a lot of thought put into their performance. The balance of their kicking game versus trying to get the ball wide to their fast men. Their offloading. I was impressed. It's the first time that I thought that second level of players have really stepped up, and we've associated that with Leinster over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, that it doesn't really matter the personnel that come in, they do a job. It felt for the first time that there was a version of that with Munster, with O'Sullivan at 8, with Liam Coombs, with Nash, with all these guys, you know, breaking through.
Because you always felt that actually that was the big gap in Munster's squad. Let's come back to that in a minute, because I just want to finish, because we didn't talk Ross Byrne and Harry Byrne. Harry Byrne, we're dying to see him play a sustained period of time at 10, but there's just been an injury issue at various stages, and they're not huge injuries, but there's just a profile there over the last 12 months where the opportunity is presenting itself, and for whatever reason it's a back strain or a calf strain or whatever.
Yeah, you've got to be careful not to be that guy too, and that can be good fortune, can be unlucky, and I'm not saying it in his case, it can be a, sometimes with some players it can be dig in a bit more and you got to ride it out, and he's had a couple of unlucky ones, and there's nothing you can do about soft tissue. He got a hip pointer at the weekend, very debilitating as well. So different players get their opportunities different ways, and
all of a sudden Ben Healy catapults past them.
Absolutely. And you know you've someone hyped for ages, and then for one reason or another they're not able to deliver, and then someone comes through the unsuspecting and they take their chance, be it a club level, and you sink or swim at international. You go well or you don't, and you get the jersey again and you hold on to it or you don't. And it's that simple.
I suppose that's the long term question, right? Because Healy's really young, and if you put him in now and he doesn't swim immediately, is there a possibility that you slow things down?
Well, I think you've got to understand the personality there as well. I don't know Ben Healy, but I understand that he's a very confident guy. And so maybe that sways your judgment, that you go, okay, maybe he has the durability and mental toughness to be able to ride out a disappointing performance. I would say from my understanding of Harry Byrne as well, he's kind of a similar mindset. He backs himself massively. So it's just a case of these guys getting a proper opportunity. But you got to decide which of those is the better option right now. You look at the kicking game of Ben Healy. You know, is that a game that you need your out half to be playing? He's got a superior kicking game, no doubt. Harry Byrne's undoubtedly got a better running game. Both quite nice passers of the ball. Healy's a nice passer of the ball. Doesn't take it to the line quite the same way, so I don't think he's going to attract defences in and create space out wide to the same degree, but he's got good range of passing. So there's lots of... There's different qualities with these different players. I guess it's what you're looking for if you're Andy Farrell.
I think too, and we've seen with a bunch of different players, some people really take to international rugby, like Jacob Stockdale, immediately into the team and all of a sudden looked incredible. Other people have come in a similar position and struggled a little bit to reproduce their club form. Now Stockdale's form has come off a little bit, so maybe he's not the best example for the long term, but some people have that temperament straight away, and that would be the argument for experimenting with both of them over the next 12 months if Andy Farrell was in any way confident that his job is safe all the way through to the World Cup. If somebody comes and says, your job is safe to the World Cup, you need to make sure you've got the best out halves and give them both game time in the Six Nations.
What do you do with your captain? So Johnny Sexton's captain of the Irish team as well.
Do you say to him, you're going to the World Cup now? I know that you've told everybody that it's only 1 year, but we're going to make a Faustian pact. We're going to make it all the way to the World Cup and you're going to have a key role.
You're not allowed to play in internationals for the next year.
Not that you're not going to play.
That is...
How about he's on the bench? And
horrible to hear from, I don't care who you are. If you still feel as though you're the best option or one of the best options, it would still be a bitter pill to swallow from any...
For the good of the team.
Listen, he'll do it. I think he will do it, but I don't think you can... For the balance and but also how dominant a character Johnny is in camp.
Can he be on the bench and the lads start game on, game
no,
off?
No, I think he can. I think he can, yeah. I think because he's got to be a realist as well in saying, I can't, if Andy Farrell goes and says, Johnny, I can't put all my eggs into your basket, I just can't. He's a smart guy. He'll realise that's a clever move. So from that point of view, provided he's involved, provided he's not shelved for a period of time, because he'll also want to stay sharp at that international level. So you're going to have to drip, you know, you're going to have to split up.
There's a compromise.
Yeah, there is a compromise. And I said it on the show a couple of weeks ago. You need to see more Joey Carberry or whoever else is the other 10 option. That's not to say that Johnny's not still number one, but we have to.
See, we know
start
he's number
giving,
one is the problem. And then unless we help the competition.
But the problem is, in the short term then, Andy Farrell's not getting the best out of his team because he's not picking the best players, which is a really hard thing to do from a coaching perspective, to give game time. So I think you'll still see Johnny
starting
for the All Black game, and maybe you'll see the others involved starting the other games.
Okay, and that would be acceptable.
I think that's fair, I think that's fair. I don't think you can be putting out a below... full strength team against the All Blacks. We can never offer that luxury.
No. But for the Argentina game, if any of those other out halves started, it'd be exciting.
Yeah, it would be.
So long as the team outside them and inside them is...
It's just them. But yeah, it is exciting. And I think it's the reality of where we need to be. So, and everyone knows that, including the coaching staff. So
it's kind of low-key, but the number 9 position is a fairly similar scenario.
Yeah, like, it has gone under the radar a lot more because of the age profile. Conor Murray's a lot younger than Johnny Sexton, but yet what's going to happen there?
Yeah.
Conor Murray, good and... not bad during the Lions tour, but maybe showed signs of some of that form of 3 years ago, but then not consistently at it. So, yeah, there's definitely scope for a shake-up in there. But yet, it feels as though Conor Murray's still very much a 23 squad man right now. You know what you're getting there, and there's a comfort that comes with them. But I do feel as though there's opportunities to be had.
Yeah, and let's see again. It's a friend of mine always talks about the young kids are always better because we haven't seen them. It's like the Andy Reid, Wes Hoolan impact. It's like, oh, he's not there. The team would be perfect if we had this player. But young Doak looks like somebody who could potentially step up at some point in the future as well. So, again, maybe they're just players that you kind of ease in over the next years. And in 5 years' time, we're going to have Doak and Healy and we'll be like, wow, that's amazing. And Casey can't get in the team. We'll see. You mentioned there the strength that the Munster team showed against Scarlets. And they're obviously going to need to draw on all of that because of what happened with RG Snyman. So it's a horrific situation for him as an individual, and it's a horrific situation for Munster because the level of excitement when they announced that this was happening, it happened, the announcement essentially came out 6 months before it happened. Then it happened, huge excitement. He gets picked, he gets injured, he's out for the year, comes back and there's a bit of an issue, and then comes back again and immediately looks like he's back. He's kind of, you know, Godzilla, swatting people away, and immediately he's gone again. So it's 2.5 years of hype and excitement punctured in the most horrible way.
Yeah, it's hugely deflating from their perspective, but from a rugby perspective, and you really have to feel for the individual as much as you do feel for for Munster, because it did feel as though this was one of the missing pieces, and we got a flavour of what Damien De Allende offered last year, and he was brilliant for them. And sometimes with your overseas players, particularly when they're still playing international, that maybe, you know, they dip in and out, and they bring back knocks from international duty. Now, De Allende didn't play a lot of international, or didn't play any international last year, and that's why we got so much of him. But he was brilliant. And
snarky, and he bought into the Munster thing, and he was right in the faces of the Leinster lads. It was great. It was exactly what they need.
I just think Orgie Snyman's athleticism to go with the nasty edge of other components in there, Jack O'Donoghue, these guys that just have a bit of an edge, Pete, just to have that skill set in there, and just a monster ball carrier, but also someone that could evolve their game. You see him, you know, with the basketball passes and those octopus arms. Like, he just, it felt as though it was going to be that next elevation to get from semi-final, finals to trophy.
Yeah.
Capabilities, and to not have him for two of his 2-year contract, and it'll be really interesting to see what comes of this now, because something similar happened to Marcel Coetzee up in Ulster. He had two near back to back season long injuries, and then in his third season had a great year. I think he might have been club player of the year last season, and then moved on. You'd have to anticipate that you'll get more out of it, Orgie Snyman, that it won't be two and gone, because players do feel a responsibility and an onus to offer something back to the club that have come and taken, not a punt on them, but paid good money, and for the player not to have delivered. So even if he thought two and head home, or two in Japan, I think now there's a strong likelihood that he'll want to deliver for that fan base. And you know, he got some rapturous applause.
He had already
a couple of times that he'd come on. He's the potential to be a cult hero.
Yeah.
In this setup, so it does feel as though hopefully the second one won't take as long to fix. I don't know. I don't know anything about ACLs really, but I'd anticipate, provided he's able to come back fully fit, that you will see a contract extension beyond these 2 years.
Well, fingers crossed for that, and that he gets back. In terms of the Munster change of style of play, what impact does not having him, does it suddenly take them from being a team that you thought would reach the semi-finals almost guaranteed of the competitions they're in, to a team who are going to have a hairy enough time now making the quarterfinals or progressing in Europe? Like,
I think there is the potential for him to be that big a loss. I do. It does feel like he's a big piece of the jigsaw that is missing.
And Rocky Elsom style impact.
Yeah, like the athleticism. We saw those videos of him in Japan. Like, when he's in the open field, he looks like Ryan Baird. He looks so comfortable. Yeah. You know, ball in hand, agility. For a guy 6'9", he's quick. He's,
when you think about it, like,
yeah, he's, yeah, you know, he looks to keep the ball alive. He doesn't want to die with it. He smashes people. He's got a big work rate. He's such a loss. He really is.
And Van Graan must be thinking, I just cannot buy a break.
He must be sick.
If he'd had him to Christmas, he'd probably have a new deal.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, we're going to wait and see. Let's just wait and see.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be interesting to see now what centre pairing, or sorry, what second row pairing they do go with. You know, there was talk all of a sudden with Jenkins, you know, fit. Where's Tyke Byrne going to fit into all of this? You know, is he a starter with Orgie? Now you don't have that issue as to where you look at the Munster back row as well, and the quality that are coming through and guys putting their hands up. It's a really competitive environment for the first time in a long time, where kind of eight go into five positions in that back five. So now all of a sudden you've lost one of the key components of that. So it's, who's going to partner with Tyke Byrne? Is it going to be Jenkins? Is it going to be Ahern?
For me, there's actually a bit of a case emerging to keep Van Graan for the sake of continuity, where the team has built up to this point. And I know it's a double-edged sword, and you know, he's had plenty of time, and we should have seen more progress by now. But if you blow it up and you get a coach who comes in and changes things and wants to play a different style of play.
Back a couple of years, like, takes you a while to build that again. Very hard for a new coach to come in unless it's
somebody from within the system.
Unless it's from someone within the system, be it Larkham or Rowntree, that comes in and just evolves what they're already doing and has a serious, a similar theory as to how the game plan should look. It does feel as though they maybe should stick. But also, on the basis of what we've seen so far, is it three try bonuses?
Yeah, they're playing great.
Yeah, they are.
Like,
they're playing
the
really well. And like, but it's the thought as well. You know, there was a really beautiful 50-22 from a scrum just inside their own half where they did a sweep. They manipulated the backfield, pulling the open winger up because there was a running threat, and then kicked it in behind. Now, the execution was a 60-metre kick from Healy. It was more like a 70-22 than a 50-22.
Yeah.
It was magnificent. But it was what they were trying to do. And that's the first time that I think they've really... I've seen them thinking their way around strategizing what they want to do in the game.
That would suggest a well-coached...
Yeah, it would. It
everybody
would.
Buying
it
in.
Would. But also players... Players pushing the pass for the first time. Guys that maybe you might have associated with dying with the ball, now all of a sudden looking for offloads. And you don't have to throw that offload every time, but if you look for it and it's not on and you place,
yeah,
that's half the battle.
There's a bang of Stephen Kenny off this where it's like, Irish players are really good. We can't keep the ball alive. We have the technical skills. We just need to force everybody to believe in it.
We have the technical skills, and I think you can see it. I even watching it, it was great to see Adam Byrne back again. But I saw parts to his game evolve that I hadn't seen for a couple of years on the basis of coaching.
Yeah,
he was never really an offloader. And two or three times at the weekend, he got the ball out of contact. And that's just a coaching piece. So it does show that good coaching has a major impact on changing the way a player is. Just because you're set one way and you come out of school or come out of an academy with a certain mindset, players can evolve and change themselves. Devin Toner became one of the best players in that first pod to take it to the line, look at the tip on, but also pull the ball out the back. When I played with Dev 7-8 years ago, he was not that guy. So that is 100% a coaching piece. And so it does feel as though we've seen a big improvement from Munster. You also have to remember that great coaches sometimes don't win tournaments, or good coaches don't win trophies. You get stuck against a great side or a team for the ages, where they're just a little bit better coached and the better players, and that's the reality of it. And you don't get the credit you deserve, but yet you're putting your team in the mix. And in another era, you know, you'd have two or three Celtic leagues or you know, URCs or whatever they're called.
So it's
tough at the moment that Van Graan has come up against a Leinster team the way he has. But if they weren't what they are now, Munster would definitely have a couple of titles.
I want to talk about Connacht because they've had a up and down start to the season. It went awful, brilliant, mediocre. That's the first start to the league for them. Andy Friend sounded devastated speaking with Joe on the show on Sunday. Said he'd worked the team too hard during the week and they need to be better around that. And Andrew Trimmer was on Monday night. He was like, I think maybe he was sending a message to the team when he was saying that. And there was a bit of psychological in that actually that might not necessarily be the full picture of what Andy Friend thought of the performance last week.
I did see, he did say one thing in the Irish Times on Monday, and it was around players bringing their A game, if I just bring it up here. The other most disappointing thing is that there's an individual responsibility there to bring your A game. Now, having watched the game back, the unforced errors is so frustrating from a coaching perspective. That's not a coaching piece, that's an individual responsibility piece. And there was a couple of clutch moments in the game. You know, were they 12-8 up before half time, and they're held up over the line. That's going to be 19-8 going at half time. You score that one, right? Big moment.
Yeah.
Then they lose a line out within 2 minutes down in their own five, their own line out. concede a scrum and lose a try and they're 12-15 down. Like in the space of 10 minutes. And Matt Williams used to talk the whole time about championship minutes, 5 minutes before and after half time. And it's true. So much happens. The momentum swing going in and the chest puffed out on the back of having a big moment in that time is significant.
How do you make your team more aware of that? Well, what can you do? Because is it that sounds like it's so individuals make the error, but collectively.
Yeah, it felt like more of an individual error piece. It really did. And I think that's why he's talking about there's a responsibility to bring your A game, because lots of guys, you know, including the bench that came on, made errors. And it's impossible to get any continuity when you're putting together 5-6 phases and then someone does something that it's just a simple error of not catching the ball or taking their eye off and looking to see where the space is before they have it in their hands.
Especially
and that happened enough times in key positions to take the wind out of their sails and relieve the pressure on the Dragons. So, like, if you look at over the game, they defended really well, particularly in the first half. You know, they conceded a sloppy try on a long kick down the field where they didn't get anyone in the chip line. But smart teams are going to that chip line an awful lot more because of the ruling, because of the 50-22, and you're going to see more and more chip kicks. And I think you're going to see the scrum half having to play less in the front line and into that chip line a bit more than we used to see kind of 5 years ago before they became part of the defence on the edge or defence in the backfield. I think you're going to have to start marshalling that chip line because teams are having a lot of success with it.
Okay, so that's going to be very interesting to track that over the course of the season. Would you be concerned about what's happened with Connacht, or is that actually quite fixable?
Well, they're playing a really good style. They try and offload the game. You look at, I think they had 11 offloads at the weekend versus 5 against Dragons. So they are trying to play. And aesthetically, it looks really good, but just sometimes when you lack accuracy and you don't take key chances at important times in the game,
the game gets away.
Yeah, like the game is all about building momentum and building a lead and building positivity and reinforcing that in your own head and denying confidence of the opposition. It's a mind game, rugby, as well as a physical game. And so how do you take advantage of when you're in the ascendancy? And you've got to put the foot on the throat. And I think they really lacked doing that at the weekend. They had one or two chances. You take that, it's a different complexion at halftime and you come out with a different mentality, you know, in the second half. Whereas Dragons had the opportunity to do that because they denied and thwarted them towards the end and then flipped it and scored in their purple patch in the first 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, without Connacht doing a whole lot wrong, the game got away from them unnecessarily.
And to try and rectify things, they've got Munster and Thomond this week. Like, it's a huge fixture for them, and particularly because of the way the European qualification works for next season, all of these derby games are suddenly imbued with far more meaning. So you'd be concerned for them this weekend?
Listen, any time you're playing Munster, and particularly the way that this Munster team is playing, you'd be nervous about it. Derby games can be a bit more of an equaliser. You know, again, it becomes definitely more of a mental game.
None of us cared about the Rainbow Cup, but Connacht beat Munster in Munster in the Rainbow Cup, which I'd say most people have kind of forgotten about who weren't involved in the game itself. But that's important. There is, like, recent memory. There's some muscle memory from them going down there and going, actually, you know what?
Yeah.
What's
no,
the
that
deal?
Is that is that stands to you, and I'm sure that they will. That Andy Friend will be reinforcing that we have won here in the last year. So this should hold no fear. Now it's a different setup. It's crowds. Now it's you know, they're building ahead of steam again. Munster, they'll have a lot of their senior players back. You'll have some of the Lions back this weekend as well. So it's going to be a very different makeup to this Munster team, but. Think about how successful their second string team was last week. Now there's pressure on the frontliners to deliver because the backup is now achieving high standards themselves. So you would be nervous. I think any team going to Thomond Park is always nervous, because if you don't bring your physicality, it's...
I'm just checking the spread. It's 15 points.
Yeah, well, there you go. It'll be... Do the bookies get it very wrong often? No, they do not. So that would suggest they should be a little bit nervous. But it'd be interesting to see how Andy Friend actually works the team this week, whether he beasts them or whether he does feel as though he overworked them last week. I don't think they lacked intensity. I just think they lacked accuracy. And
he was putting that down.
There was so much intent. There was lots of really good intent, but intent's only so good if you don't back it up with good accuracy of being able to take advantage of those momentum swings and the opportunities that present themselves. Any team in the league will counter that with their own chances. And if you can't negate them or thwart them, well, all of a sudden you get those swings in games that are the difference.
Yeah, and the league is going to be competitive this year. Everybody's going to be playing their best players every week. So that's a leap forward as well for us. One last thing I just wanted to talk to you about before we go is the rumours about the agents are out doing their work. Everybody at Leinster is getting a move to France or England. It's the time of the year where those contracts, those conversations start happening. And it's kind of an unusual scenario where it looks like there's going to be a significant change in the IRFU. There's a new CEO. That's definitely going to happen. So some stuff might get lost in the wash. Some contracts that would be done might be a bit slower to get done. Already, Ross Byrne, Andrew Porter, Reece Ruddock are being linked. That was a couple of weeks ago. And you're going to see more of these stories coming out over the next while. Going to be very hard for Leinster to keep their squad together.
Yeah, any successful team, when you have the quality and depth of a squad that Leinster have, it's going to be difficult to hold on to players because lots of teams would bite your hand off for Reece Ruddock. He's a starter in lots of teams' European side, whereas he's definitely not a guaranteed starter in the Leinster setup. Now, he has been over the course of the last couple of years, but that's been through Dan Levy's injury, through others' lack of form, and his consistent performances. But you bring Jack Conan, who's the Lions' number eight, back into the fray. You look at Levy's performances. What about guys like Will Connors that have been forgotten? Van der Fleer's back playing well. So you've got to try and
Max Deegan,
look at
Caelan Doris.
So you got to look at the balance of what that back row looks like as well. It's not shocking to hear that agents are offering their players up to other clubs, in France.
Like Furlong's deal is only a year deal as well.
Yeah, well, I think there's certain deals that are more important than others. And with respect to Reece Ruddock, you can't lose Tadhg Furlong. He's going to get the focus of their concentration. And likewise,
they're going to back up a ring stroke for Tadhg Furlong.
Yeah, and likewise, Porter is going to become a very important player. He's not going anywhere. So it's just a matter of locking in a deal. Cian Healy's 31 or 2 now. They've moved him over to the other side a little bit and Porter the other way.
I mean, that's not quite moving from 12 to 13.
No, it's not. That is not like...
We didn't hear anything about this over the summer.
That is such a big deal.
Yeah.
That is such a big deal in their world to understand. It's completely different angles. And having pressure on two shoulders versus one shoulder, scrummaging, it's really not. And that's why you can see hookers playing tight head, but not loose head and tight head swapping a lot.
Yeah.
You see John Schmidt in the past played hooker and tight head because of that pressure aspect on both shoulders. Whereas it and your angles are completely different than the expectation on locking up, keeping your scrum square or getting an edge on a shoulder with only the ability to drive through one shoulder. I won't say that I know the nuances of it all, but I do know that it is a very, very difficult skill to change up. And that's why props that play on both sides are few and far between, because it's, to be an expert on one is impressive. To be an expert on both is a rare commodity.
Does Healy extend his career a couple of years if they pull this off?
I don't know is the honest answer, because obviously they feel as though you want to get Porter's around the pitch play on as well, and as if he can be a proficient scrummager on that loose head side. And you look at the quality at your tight head and at your hooker at provincial and maybe national level as well, you've got the makings of a great ball playing front row there.
Yeah.
So, I think it's an eye on realising that Cian Healy has an awful lot of miles on the clock as well. And he's been a phenomenal pro and he continues to be a great pro now. But he started when he was 18. And, 14, 15 years, as the game evolves as well, and you're looking for more from your props to the natural progression is that other guys are going to come in that are going to be able to scrummage as well as you were, and then maybe we'll offer a little bit more from a ball playing perspective. So it's a natural evolution of the cycle of a player, you know, that ultimately we don't see him maybe being there in 3 years' time. So we've got to try and find a way to fit someone, push someone else through. Will Cian Healy be there at the World Cup in 2 years' time? Be very interesting to see. I don't know enough about backup.
It'd be amazing if he went as a tight end, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be ridiculous.
It would be. It really would be.
One of the all-time great athletic achievements in Irish sports.
It would be. And he's come back from this career-ending hand injury as well. So it's amazing. I've watched from afar with amazement as to how he's evolved as an individual and as a player. And from a messer in the early years and a guy that was loving life in his early 20s and knew how to have a great time, to evolve into this consummate professional and this husband and father, and completely changed his lifestyle to elongate his career, is really admirable. And you know, what I really like is he's not afraid to go to any expense to work, you know, to use his hard-earned money to get an edge professionally about recovery, or, you know, different techniques, or different seeing different individuals. It that's all out of his pocket, or a lot of it's out of his pocket. And I really respect that a guy realizes his body, his business, and he is willing to invest in himself to get more out the other end.
Oh, it'll be interesting to get him in sometime and to listen to that journey and that story and what happens next.
He's a really interesting person. He's a really interesting person, very popular guy, and has a wildness in him, which I'm sure he probably tries to curtail now, but he's he's a great, great teammate.
Right. On that note, Brian, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Nice one.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.